Hello and welcome. My name is Adam Coutts. So I think many of you know me, but for those of you that don't, I've been teaching meditation for 21 years. I've been sitting daily meditation for 34 years. And when I was younger, I lived a total of 4 years in mindfulness-based monasteries, often sitting mindfulness meditation up to 10 hours a day in America and in Asia. Today's course is about I want to say I appreciate your attendance today. Today's course is about general tips for healthy sleep. I was putting together the course on how meditation can help with sleep. That's mostly the subject of class number one. When the things I was looking at, the books, the websites, etc., just had tons of tips in general for sleep. So I put all of that into a second course. We'll also be practicing two techniques, awareness of restful parts of the body, bringing our attention to parts of the body that are naturally already pretty tranquil, and also visualizing a happy scene, a relaxing scene. I'm not going to have dedicated time for questions and answers, so if you have questions, please feel free to put them in the chat. Please don't have side conversations because I will be monitoring the chat and also trying to lead the material. So that would be most helpful. I appreciate it. Again, I appreciate your attendance. Okay, so general healthy sleep tips. Meditation as a way of helping with insomnia or with getting better sleep is more effective when it's part of a general effort towards improving our sleep. And falling asleep with ease and staying asleep and feeling refreshed in the morning, it's helpful to develop general habits and practices that are conducive to sleeping well on a regular basis. And there are things we can do at bedtime to set us up, to help us to sleep and set us up for success during the hours before we actually go to bed. I don't think there's a one-off solution for good sleep. Sometimes people find it, you know, they change their pillow or something. They get a CPAP machine and insomnia just disappears. But I think undertaking self-study and trying different things, that's generally the spirit in which I recommend meditating. You know, I often say to people, experiment with different ways of sitting on chairs and cushions and find one that feels comfortable. Experiment with different techniques and see what really feels like it's helping you to make progress. And I think the same thing is helpful when trying to get healthier and more relaxing sleep. So some factors to try, and maybe many of you, if you've been trying to help yourself to get deeper and more restful sleep, maybe you've tried some of these, but maybe some of them you haven't. It'll be new information, hopefully. So one is to set a regular bedtime, to go to bed and wake up around the same time each day. I think if people's circadian rhythm locks in, it helps many people to fall asleep and stay asleep more easily. I mean, our body has its own regulatory system, an internal clock as to when to feel alert and sleepy at set times during the day. So if we develop and support strong circadian rhythm, the consistency tells our body when to stay awake. You know, that one thing that sleep experts say is to go to bed at the same time, including weekends and holidays, that can help with easy and restful sleep. I think they also say avoid napping. I personally don't do that. I have a philosophy for myself. Anytime I'm allowed to go to sleep, you know, I'm not on the clock for something, and I want to go to sleep and I'm able to go to sleep, that's a good time. But in general, I think for avoiding insomnia and sleeping through the night, people do say avoiding napping. You know, there's a research study, and when I was getting a psychology degree a long time ago, they found, you know, some people have the Monday blues. It's just a bummer to come back to work on Monday. And what they found is that it didn't seem to be whether people had a good time on the weekend or not, paradoxically. That didn't seem to be the main factor as to whether people get the Monday blues. It also didn't seem to be whether people enjoyed their coworkers or not, or what they did. It was really, a lot of it had to do with whether people stayed up later on weekends or not, and whether getting up earlier on Monday was sort of yanking themselves back to an earlier schedule. Another thing to try is have your bedroom be an oasis of peace. One factor with that is You know, I think to some extent, having the right environment is a question of personal preference, like what's going to make your bedroom seem tranquil and easeful. But it's recommended have it be stress and distraction free, keep it cool and quiet and dark. I'll talk more about each of these. So dark, our internal clock is, of course, influenced by light and dark. Irregular exposure can disrupt our rhythms. One thing that often comes up when people meditate, you know, and I've been answering people's questions about this for 21 years, is what do people do if they get sleepy when they meditate and they want to stay awake? Well, turn up the lights. And what do people do sometimes if they're a little hyper? Well, you can turn down the lights. Many monasteries that I've lived in, they turn down the lights as a way of calming people down in the meditation hall. So, you know, light has a big influence on just neurobiologically on our circadian rhythms and our expectation as to whether it's time to sleep or not. I was listening to something recently that birds' bones are pretty thin and that their skull is pretty thin, and there's parts of their brain that can tell if it's sunlight or not. And if it's sunlight, their brain kind of wakes up and is more alert, and if it's not, they're of course more sleepy. And I think if we expose ourselves to natural sunlight during the day, it kind of gives us the same message, like, hey, it's daytime, time to be awake. And if at night our bedroom is completely dark, that's a signal to our body to generate sleepy neurotransmitters. So even a small amount of light from a cell phone or a hallway or a street light can disrupt the production of melatonin. I think some people are more sensitive to this than others. But of course, using your bedroom, making your bedroom as dark as possible using shades or curtains or blinds to block unwanted light. Of course, you know, on airplanes, people wear eye masks. I wear caps most places I go, like a little watch cap. And so when I want to sleep someplace and it's bright, I can pull that down over my eyes also. A little trick that I have found helps me to sleep well is when I go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I don't turn on lights. You know, I give myself a second to adjust the light. And if it's too dark, I'll turn on a light in front of, like behind me, like in the room I just was in, so that I can see rather than in the room that I'm in. Because bright lights in the middle of the night say to your brain, hey, time to wake up, time to be alert. And then when you go back to sleep, it can create a feeling of restlessness. I think finding the right temperature is important and helpful. Body temperature changes as we fall asleep and our core temperature decreases and the temperature of our hands and feet increase. That's why people often like to stick their feet out from under the covers. But the wrong temperature for you can make it hard to fall and stay asleep. And so managing your core body temperature can help us to drift off to sleep faster and more deeply. I think it's a question of the thermostat, of bed covers, of heaters, of the right sleepwear, of open and closing windows. I think most people generally find that cooling down their bedroom seems to help. I think research shows that the sweet spot for many people is between 60 and 67. Some people like it up to 75. They can't fall asleep if it's colder than that or have a hard time. My parents like it about 60. They live in the high desert and they open up their window. They keep their bedroom really pretty frosty. For me, I find it helps me sometimes if I have insomnia to get a heater and turn it up to about 68 or 70. So individual preferences vary, and it's helpful to find a temperature that works for you. One other part about restfulness is to create a sense of quiet. We want our bedroom to have sound tranquility as well. Minimize sound disturbances both from inside and outside the home. So you saw there like earplugs. I personally find if I wear earplugs too much, my ears start to get unhappy. Like I don't think human ears are designed to wear earplugs all the time. But you know, if you're on an airplane or in a strange environment. Recently, it took me 2.5 days to get from Albuquerque back to the Bay Area. A couple weeks ago because of the Southwest Airlines meltdown. And so I spent 2 nights non-consensually in Vegas, and I spent a night in old Vegas. And man, they were playing pounding classic rock till 2 a.m, just really deafening. And I was glad that I had some earplugs with me. But I wouldn't want to do that every night. I don't think it's good for, I'm not moving to downtown Vegas, downtown old town Vegas. And then there's little air cleaners, white noise generators. So that particular model there is one that I have, and I use it every night. I have it play rain sounds as I'm falling asleep. There's some people also that have air purifiers or air humidifiers that make a humming sound that can do something similar. One thing that I've noticed about quiet is it's a question of one's expectations. I've been to Burning Man a lot, the festival out in the desert. Some of you maybe have heard of it or gone. And it's really loud there. There's loud pounding music and there's people yelling, and I fall asleep because I think my subconscious is like, that's fine. If any of that was here in where I live normally, with those trees around, it would jolt me awake. Sometimes when I'm in the city and I hear people yelling out on the street, it doesn't really alert my brain. It's like, okay, that's normal. But again, here in the suburbs where I live, if someone was yelling kind of crazy stuff, I would be like, hey, I'm not safe. My subconscious would wake me right up. It's strange. It seems to some extent to be a question of expectations or what, some sort of subconscious filtering in our brain thinks is normal for the environment. Quiet is not, I have noticed, some sort of absolute scale. Okay, so we're going to do our first technique today, and it is mindfulness of rest states in the body. So I think the classic way to meditate is to meditate on things that are there. For example, to meditate, if one was to meditate on sound, to bring one's attention to the sound that one is able to hear. That's a pretty normal way to meditate. But there's also meditating on what's absent. So, for example, meditating on silence. You can, even if you can hear sounds in a certain direction, maybe you can meditate on the silence that you, in directions you can't hear, or the silence between sounds that you can hear. Similarly, you can meditate on body sensations that are relatively tranquil or thinned out, the ones that don't really call to your attention, the ones that aren't super strong, the ones that are more relaxed, less activated, more restful, kind of thinned out, not much happening. So you can pay attention to any sort of relaxation in your body, any part of your body where a sensation seems absent or fewer nerve endings, unlike the hands or the face. So, the back of the torso, the scalp, the triceps, the back of the thighs, the top of the feet, those are parts of the body that many people report being relatively low sensation. Sleepiness is definitely something to tune into in this technique. Every time you breathe out, your rib cage and your diaphragm relaxes, and there's not much happening also in the areas where we pay attention to the breath between breaths. That's a problem in breath meditation, that between breaths is so boring, but it's a great thing for this meditation. Sometimes it feels like some part of the body has disappeared. And if you really tune in with a lot of intentionality, you can often find a very subtle and very relaxing sensation there. And then also emotional neutrality. Sometimes when we're not really feeling much of any sort of emotion, we can detect that in the body, in the emotional core, in the belly, in the chest, in the face. I think in this technique, it's also okay to create relaxation, to intentionally relax some part of the body, intentionally kind of breathe into an emotion to soothe it, to let some sort of body part fall limp and loose. We can pay attention to something restful in our body, even if there's activity or intensity somewhere else in the body. It can be relative, it can be shallow, it can be local, it can be partial, but if there's something relatively more restful, we can bring our attention there. And you can let your attention stay in one spot if you find one spot in the body that's especially restful, or you can let it travel around to different spots. Sometimes we need a process of elimination. We need to say, okay, where in the body do I feel something pretty strongly? And then where in the body do I, so what does that have left? All right, so I invite you to sit up more upright than you usually do, lifting up with the crown of your head, feeling your spine gently elongated upwards, sitting back away from the chair, the back of the chair that you're on, and we will start. So I invite you to see if you can find any sort of restful sensations in your body. Again, you may need to do a process of elimination. We're going to go for 5 minutes with this technique. And when you find something in your body that's relatively restful, relatively tranquil, chilled out, comfortable, I invite you to make contact with those feelings. Really fully, deeply, richly feel those relatively settled and calm parts of your body. Have your attention sink in to that part of the body, how it feels like water into a sponge, to a fresh, clean sponge. Having your attention be stabilized and rested in some of the relaxing sensations in your body, instead of your attention darting around all over the place, having your attention be settled, steady, inside parts of your body that feel relatively mellow and peaceful. Just letting your entire world be simplified down to one easeful sensation in your body. Now, of course, you may find your attention is drawn elsewhere to sounds besides my voice. If your eyes are open, eyes closed is perfectly fine, but you might be distracted by sights. Your attention may be drawn to active sensations in the body, strong sensations. Maybe pictures and movies, visual thinking, verbal thinking, am I doing this right? What do I think of this technique? If your attention is drawn to any distractions, simply let all that stuff drop into the background. And bring your attention back again and again to spacious, calm part of the body. You can use just a light feather touch as you let distractions drop away. In a patient and spacious way, choose to pay attention to restful sensations in the body. We're sensitizing our awareness, slowing down. Instead of paying attention to what yells loudly in our body, we pay attention to what whispers. If your eyes are closed, slowly opening them, feeling yourself in the chair or seat that you're on. And great job, everyone. So maybe staying grounded in any sort of restful sensations you're able to find in that technique. as we transition back to subject matter and content. I will say, if that technique was a challenge for you, great. You learned something new, you developed some meditation power. Learning to sit still with some agitation and focus your mind. And if it was easeful and pleasant, then that's great too. All the better. You got to enjoy some meditation, so it's all good. The sign of a good meditation is that you did it. That's the only sign. All right, so getting back to tips for healthy sleep. One is relaxing music for winding down. You don't need scientific studies to tell you that listening to music can quiet your mind and help you. Research has shown that music can have a direct effect on our parasympathetic nervous system, encouraging our body to relax and slip into refreshing sleep. So you can lower your heart rate and your breathing. You can lower your blood pressure and even relax muscles by listening to relaxing music. Biological changes you experience, those are the biological experiences that happen when we fall asleep. I think findings have suggested that music with a beat of 60 to 80 beats per minute is what helps tranquilize a person. 60 BPM is the low end of healthy resting heart rate. I've run the Beta Breakers run in San Francisco a few times, and they used to have bands and DJs. I don't think that they don't seem to really have that much anymore. But I remember the first time I ran it, there was like 30 bands and they're playing rock and roll. And I think there's a general human tendency that our heartbeat matches loud rhythms around us, musical rhythms. And man, it was horrible for me to be running full out and really trying to exercise, and my heartbeat would get hijacked by these bands playing their BPM, and it would really mess with my physical well-being. I think dance floor DJs often know that music at about 128 BPM is the ideal to get people kind of excited and amped up and feeling like they're out having fun. So yeah, people's heartbeat matching BPM. There's a lot of different areas of life where that shows up. I do think to some extent it's a question of personal preference, what sort of music relaxes you. And I think in general, people often find it more relaxing to listen to music that they know and enjoy than music that's new. Some people like nature sounds. Some people like religious chants. My parents have a classical music mix. For me, classical music in general is not very relaxing because a lot of it has kind of dark parts to it, kind of like emotionally complex parts. I mean, it's sophisticated music. So I like a lot of electronic music that's really simple and tonal and just doesn't get at all complicated emotionally. And I think, like a lot of things, if you have a sleep mix, listening to it regularly can help you. It can just sort of operant conditioning. It, you know, putting it on signals to your subconscious, hey, it's time to go to sleep. So just putting it on can kind of create a sense of, it can kind of be conditioning. Yeah. Another thing that's helpful is to declutter the bedroom. Studies have found that the people that are surrounded by distracting things like unfinished projects and things to do are more likely to have a sleep disorder. And what your eyes see when you walk into a bedroom can influence whether or not you have an easy or difficult time falling asleep. If your house is big enough, some people live in a one bedroom or a studio or something, so maybe you can't, but if your house is big enough, it's good to put things that are stressful in other rooms. Personally, I, for example, for years, ever since I was first exposed to this idea, I don't keep bookshelves in my bedroom wherever I move, because books are something to do, just a shelf full of books I want to read. So it's kind of like a little activating, whereas I don't want that in a room that I sleep in. There's a classic instruction for meditation, which is don't have something activating in your line of sight. Like, don't have a pile of unfinished laundry or some little gizmo that you need, that you're planning to fix. Don't have that right, you know, if you're someone that meditates with your eyes open. Don't have your phone in your line of sight. Those are all, get the mind spinning. Get the mind kind of like thinking a bunch. Feel like you can't be in the moment. You got to go do something. Of course, picking bedding that feels right, comfortable mattresses and pillows. Whether a mattress is soft or firm, that's a matter of personal preference. I think a plurality of people, from what I've read, like medium firm mattresses. It can affect sleep quality, of course, and prevent sleep disturbances and muscular discomfort to have a perfect mattress. You know, a lot of ads for pillows or mattresses, they say, you know, buy our thing and you'll get the best night of sleep that you ever got. So I guess that happens, you know. Maybe you've had a friend or you yourself have said, I changed my pillow, I changed my mattress, made a difference. Pillows can affect the neck curve. They can affect temperature. They can affect comfort. If you're a side sleeper, as most people are, pillows should comfortably support your head, neck, and ear. I think generally people that sleep on their back may want a thinner pillow to limit stress on the neck. You know, sometimes people are allergic to their pillow fill. That can be a factor. Some people, research has found that orthopedic pillows may be better than feather memory foam. You know, I think in general, a comforter, it should literally be comforting. It should be fluffy. You know, some people like blankets. Now there are these things, weighted blankets. You know, they're really heavy, especially people with anxiety. It can be calming. I know a few people that have experimented with that. The fabric of the clothes that we wear to bed can affect how well we sleep. We want it to be comfortable and keeps us at a pleasant temperature throughout the night. One important thing is, of course, medical issues. Sleep apnea is commonly mistaken for psychological insomnia issues, but people get a CPAP machine and then they can sleep better. So if you have a partner that says you snore a lot, or to be honest with you, I'm not really sure of all the signs of sleep apnea. I guess it's, I'm not even going to make something up. I've had it told to me by people that have it, but I don't remember. Physical pain can be a big factor affecting sleep. And so developing healthy strategies for managing pain during the day can improve sleep at night. Sometimes when a person has long stretches of insomnia, it's good to see a medical doctor and make sure that there's no underlying medical issues. I mean, it could be, you know, sort of a psych. I think most people, when they have insomnia, it's psychological. It's a question of a spinning mind or something like that. But definitely for many people, it's a question of some sort of chronic medical issue that we could get help for. I think trying different sleep positions, the three main positions are back, stomach, and side. I found for myself that most of my life, I fall asleep on my side. That's kind of my go-to. But just in the last like 5 years, getting my belly makes me fall asleep really quickly. So I don't know how it's changed the older I've gotten. I think sometimes sleeping on one's back can be linked to blocked airways and sleep apnea and snoring. Yeah, experimenting with trying a different posture can help, possibly. I think research has found that having pets and children in bed can disrupt sleep. So if that's something that you do, I remember a friend of mine once said that he was getting sick of his wife having his kids in bed. I'm like, how old are they again? And they were 10. I was like, that's not how my family grew up. So yeah, they had a different standard there and he didn't like it, you know? So however old your kids are, if they're in bed with you guys, I guess if they're like, you know, newborns or in the first 3 months, you know, maybe that makes some sense. But if they're a little older, maybe not so good. I think dietary influence can affect our sleepfulness. What we ingest can affect our biology in so many ways, of course. So the common wisdom, as I'm sure you know, is for better sleep, limit your caffeine. Coffee and tea and energy drinks and soda and chocolate. You know, don't have those. You know, people typically say no caffeine 6 hours before bed. I actually have ADHD, and you know, one of the paradoxes of ADHD is that relatively small amounts of stimulants relax us. So I personally, if I drink a little caffeine, it'll put me to sleep. The ADHD brain is an unusual brain. Most people, caffeine, you know, for some people past noon is not good. It has people, it messes with people's wakefulness. So avoiding foods that might upset your stomach or mess with your energy. Sugars are negative for many people. It can mess with sleep cycles, kind of make people hyper and then lethargic when the sugar crash happens. Spicy or heavy foods can sometimes keep some people awake with heartburn or indigestion. I think research has found that big carb bomb meals, you know, big pasta or something, can be detrimental to a good night's sleep. Even if they put us to sleep, the sleep's not really that restful. Similarly, alcohol. Sometimes, you know, people, they can't sleep, they have a nightcap, right? You know, I know people that when they can't sleep, they kind of drink themselves to sleep, you know. That's one way to go. But I think that a lot of times alcohol disrupts brainwaves and we don't really feel that refreshed in the morning. Also, I think alcohol, you know, it does certain things to kind of put a person out, but then that wears off and people are often have kind of insomnia if alcohol is what put them to sleep. So I don't really think that that's a good solution to do regularly if that's not obvious. Smokers generally are less likely to feel well rested, and some people think that has to do with the stimulating effect of nicotine. There are, of course, recreational and prescription drugs that can, of course, impact our ability to fall asleep and stay asleep. Maybe you know people, or yourself, you've tried some sort of prescription psychiatric medication or other sort of medical medication, and then you just can't, you know, the person just can't do it because of the insomnia. I've heard that from people. I think in general, like so much in life, eating healthy foods kind of keeps our blood sugar and our hormone levels balanced, helps us to fall asleep at night. Some people say that high fat meals, Atkins Paleo, may promote deeper and more restful sleep, but maybe those are people that believe in Atkins and Paleo in general. I think in general, people say don't eat high carbs within four hours before bed. Generally, if you're going to eat a big carb meal, eat it earlier in the day. Of course, proper hydration, you know, making sure that you drink enough water, but not too much water right before bed, especially if you're a man over 40. And then there's, of course, sleep-enhancing supplements. Melatonin is, you know, the famous one now. It's a hormone that's naturally produced by the body that gives signal to the brain to close down shop. I argue with my fiance regularly. Melatonin is not a depressant. It's not like, you know, she sometimes says, like, I don't want to be trashed in the morning. I don't want to be a wreck in the morning. But melatonin, it kind of just gives a starting gun to the brain, like, hey, time to shut down. It doesn't actually shut down the brain. It doesn't dampen brain activity. So that's the way that works. Magnesium, some people say, activates neurotransmitters responsible for sleep. There's the amino acid L-theanine, which has sedative relaxing properties. As an aside, if you ever by mistake drink too much caffeine and your heart's racing, and you know, you might say to yourself, well, I just got to ride it out. The only thing I can do is wait for this to wear off. The amino acid L-theanine actually helps with that. I think something like it limits the amount of caffeine that can get into the brain or something like that. 5-HTP can boost the production of serotonin that's been linked to the regulation of sleep. There's GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, that can help the central nervous system relax. You know, your grandmother's favorite, chamomile tea. There's other teas that in the grocery store, they say bedtime tea. There's passion flower and valerian root and hops extract and California poppy and lemon balm and fresh skullcap, you know. Aromatherapy, people say lavender and chamomile and clary sage. I don't know anything about those things. I saw them on the web that some people believe in them. It is dangerous to rely on any sort of sleep aid all the time, but it's of course better than Benadryl or diphenhydramine, you know, the sleeping pills that you can get or cold pills that knock you out. I assume that if you had insomnia, you've probably tried those chemical pills, and you know that they can be addictive, and they can really leave me a wreck the next day. I really don't ever do them. Another factor that's helpful is exercise. Regular physical activity and exercise during the day is found to bring beneficial outcomes to the healthy quality of sleep. They can increase the duration and quality of sleep in part by boosting the production of serotonin and decreasing levels of stress hormone cortisol. And so one study found that previously sedentary adults that got their heart rate up 4 times a week improved their sleep quality from poor to good. They also reported less depressive and anxious symptoms and more vitality and less sleepiness during the daytime too. So win-win-win. I think in general, working out before noon helps better than later in the day. And of course, you know, exercising right before bed can rev your heart rate up and create physical restlessness. You know, I talked about this in class one. Exercise does help you with getting restful sleep, but it's not like if you have insomnia, you should go and pump some iron or go for a vigorous run. that's, you know, that'll help you fall asleep maybe a couple hours later, but probably not right when you get back or right when you're done. Similarly, you know, I talked about this in class one, a lot of forms of mindfulness will help you sleep if you do it earlier in the day, but they can kind of rev you up a bit right as you're doing, which is why the techniques that I'm teaching in today and in part one are helpful. They're specific techniques that are helpful for sleepiness, for creating sleepiness, for relaxing us. The techniques that we do for long-term spiritual growth are different than the techniques that we do to kind of wind down for sleep. And similar to physical exercise. Good long-term thing, not a thing to knock you out though. So another factor is limiting screen time. And this is, of course, something we hear a lot about, that having our TV or a cell phone or computers or pads, social networking, computer games, they can be terrible for sleep. The classic advice is put your blue screens away at least an hour before you go to bed. You know, emails and to-do items on the computer can kind of rev our mind up and have us feel a little wound up, like there's something we need to do. Of course, especially watch out for horror or action movies, suspense novels, news and politics. You know, there's so much going on in the world that can be disrupting. But electronic devices emit a kind of light that stimulate the brain, reduces melatonin secretion, and make it harder for us to fall asleep. There are apps that you can have on your phone and on computers that can help dim the light and make it more sleep appropriate. There's Twilight for Androids. There's an app called F-Lux, F.Lux, L-U-X, on PC. I have that, and it really does. It makes the light more kind of, I guess, redder at night. And then Apple, I've been told, Apple phones and Apple computers have it built in. So, you know, this is, of course, about meditation helping with sleep. So maybe you use phone apps and have use a guided meditation to help you sleep. If so, you know, the general recommendation is have your phone face down to hide the bright screen if you have that next to your bed to fall asleep. You know, research in general has found that having your phone or your computer in the same room as you trying to sleep, not such a great idea. So yeah, where I live, you know, a little one bedroom, but I always keep my computers and my phone in the other room. You know, if you do wake up at night, if you have to check your phone, if you have to check something on your computer, of course. But in general, the recommendation is don't expose your eyes to a screen in the middle of the night. That'll kind of wake your brain up. All right, we're going to do our second technique, which is happy place meditation. You know, sometimes you might hear a mental health professional train a person that gets panic attacks or generally has issues with anxiety to go their happy place, to visualize a place that they enjoyed when they were childhood, or a place that they've been on vacation, or, you know, can be an imagined place. Doesn't have to be a real location. And then just really imagine yourself there. Any place that's relaxing or calming to you. Really feel it in your body and hear it with as much vividness and richness and full immersion as you can. If you have ruminating thoughts, just as best you can, release them. If, you know, reality intrudes, like this isn't real, you know, just try and let that drop in the background and make the choice to really cultivate an imagination of a happy place. Now, if someone is a regular meditator and they told me they did this technique, I would say to them, like, well, that's not really a good technique to make your main meditation technique first thing in the morning. It's a little bit escapist. You know, I would recommend feel your body, notice your thoughts, count your breaths, you know, tune into reality. But as a technique to do, hey, I have insomnia, I haven't been able to fall asleep, I'm going to visualize a happy place just to tranquilize and slow down my heart rate and just have me feel like everything's okay for a bit. I think it's a great thing to do. So we're going to do this technique also for, let's see here, a few minutes. We'll do it a few minutes. I'm going to have us visualize a waterfall in a forest. Yep, here we go. Checking your posture, sitting more upright, lifting up with the crown of your head, and we will go. So imagine you're deep in the forest in a beautiful green river valley. It's just an intimate, serene sanctuary. And there's a relaxing waterfall in front of you. There's tall, healthy trees all around, wilderness forest. Trees are swaying in the slight breeze. Off in the distance, you can see faint, misty mountains. It's a beautiful, glorious view. Relaxing, calm. The weather's gorgeous. It's pleasant. Feel the warm air, just inviting you to relax, drift off. You're lying in a lounge chair. Just feel yourself sinking deeper into that lounge chair. Feeling the chair under you as you relax and rest. You can smell pine needles, the damp moss around the waterfall, maybe some wildflowers. You can hear the splashing of the waterfall, the wind through the trees, the bird song, a little bit of mist in the air from the waterfall. Really hear the sounds. Feel the warm air and the mist. Smell the smells. Full immersion. Inhaling deeply and filling your lungs with fresh, clean, relaxing forest air. Feeling calm. Feeling safe. You look around in this peaceful place and you see a little waterfall. It's about 10 feet tall. The water is gently and rhythmically rolling down over the rocks. Relaxing, hypnotic rhythm. The tumbling water glows and sparkles delightfully in the sunlight. Colorful rainbow prisms in the water drop mist as the spray captures the light. You can just hear the steady rhythm of the water dropping into the pond at the base of the waterfall. And the waterfall's flow is washing everything away, helping you to go into deeper relaxation and ease. A little bit of sunlight coming down through the canopy of trees. Just feeling so relaxed and at ease. Beautiful day out in nature. Feel at one with this little sanctuary. Off in the distance, you can see a little rabbit hopping around. You can see a turtle on a rock in the pond sunning itself. Animals feel friendly. And you look at the tranquil blue water at the base of the waterfall. It's foam gently bubbling. The area where the waterfall lands. And you can hear the calming hum of the water falling. And you feel more and more at ease. So slowly open your eyes if they're closed, feeling yourself back in your chair, and great job, everyone. So there's a phone app called Insight Timer. And Insight Timer is just different teachers post guided meditations. And I have an account on it, and I have two posted meditations. One is finding an upright posture for meditation. The other is a half hour version of what we just did. So it's a phone app and it's a website and it's free, but you do need to sign up to access it. So I'll put a link to that. I think if a whole lot of people look at my thing, I get a few pennies. So I'm sharing it just if you would like to explore that technique we just did, the visualizing the forest waterfall, a half hour version of it. Again, it's a free app, it's a free website. So another thing that's helpful is winding down for sleep. Give yourself some time to wind down, maybe cuddles and physical touch, standing and holding each other, sitting down, humans and with other humans that you might live with or pets. Sometimes people find something like needlepoint or crafting that does not involve a screen. I think late night reading can provide an alternative thought stream, the author's words in mind rather than one's own thoughts. And, you know, talking about a book, not obviously a Kindle or an iPad or a backlit device. I saw on Twitter not that long ago, someone said, I had to unplug my book so my friend could charge his cigarette. The future is stupid. So yeah, these days we charge our books, but old-fashioned books, the paper kind. Some people find taking a warm bath or a shower can relax the body. It can lower the heart rate and blood pressure and relax tense muscles. It can speed up the body's temperature change because if you cool down after a warm bath, you know, that can signal the brain to go to sleep. Maybe some of you know Wim Hof, or, you know, if you're sleepy, taking a cold shower can wake you up, but a warm shower or warm bath can calm you down. Some people find that journaling helps before bed. So if, you know, especially if you're ruminating about something and anxious and your mind is spinning, I think writing it down can help to let it go. It can take the commotion out of your head so that you can just sort of release and clear and untangle your mind, encouraging you to surrender more swiftly into sleep. So some people find to process the day like a diary. Here's how my day was. That helps them to wind down. Some people find a gratitude list, what I feel thankful for, what positive happened today, what blessings came my way, what can I give thanks for. You know, something some people do before meals, some people do first thing in waking up. You can give gratitude for yourself, like what did I accomplish today? I think part for me when I have insomnia, it's often feeling like I didn't accomplish enough today. I kind of got to stay up and get more done or else like my life's going to fall apart. And I think if I just think to myself often like, well, here's five things I accomplished today. It often has me feel like, yeah, you know, actually, it was a good day. I think it's bedtime. I think it's time to knock off and tomorrow will be a new day. So I think feeling gratitude for yourself, acknowledging yourself for even if it was simple things like return a few emails. I think some people feel like creating a to-do list for tomorrow. I'll talk at the very end of today's class about trust. And I think a big part of trust is trusting your tomorrow self, your future self, that they're on top of things. Like tomorrow you is competent and you don't need to kind of figure it all out tonight. Tomorrow you will say like, yep, picking up where we left off yesterday, I got it. So sometimes I think writing out a to-do list for tomorrow has your subconscious be like, okay, yeah, we're in communication with tomorrow us about what's important. I can let that all go and just untangle and trust my bed and just turn off for the night. I think one technique that I found that is complicated but is really a can't miss, it really works every time I try it, is just to write out a list of everything that's a problem in my life, anything stressing me out or feels incomplete or anything that's imperfect. And it can be lifelong issues or it can be just sort of something that just came up that night. You know, when I do it, I put into categories like social relationships, money and finances, to-do items, health and body, et cetera. And when I get that all out on paper, you know, my subconscious is like, okay, yeah, you know everything that's bugging me, everything that's kind of a problem. Yeah, we're good. You know, I don't need to keep bugging you and keeping you awake. Another way that sometimes people do that is they'll lie there or, you know, sit in a meditation posture and say, what's the thing that's bugging me the most right now? And then they kind of imagine that thing being a glowing ball that they take out of their body and put into a box. and they imagine putting the box on a shelf, maybe in a different room. So am I fine? Am I good? No, this other thing's bugging me too. And you put that glowing ball into a box, and you cover up the lid of the box so you can't see the glowing ball anymore, and you put it on a shelf in the other room. And it's amazing how, you know, it's on the shelf, it's waiting for you. You can take it down tomorrow and open up the box and deal with the glowing ball issue. But that visualization can create a lot of space. Some people recommend having a pen and paper next to your nightstand so that you have, if you have ideas that pop into your mind in the middle of the night, you don't have to go walk to the other room and get your muscles all activated. You can just write it down and roll over and fall back asleep. If you have a nightlight you can use, that's better than turning on a light to do that, of course. Generally, people say don't look at a clock. If you're staring at a clock when you have insomnia, there's this feeling of, I'm going to be wrecked tomorrow. Look at all this time I'm wasting. What's wrong with me? Look at all this time passing. If you have insomnia and you have a clock on your night table, some people say turn it around. And definitely your phone shouldn't be nearby to check. Like I said, I think in class one thing that my teacher recommends, or one of my main teachers recommends, is if you have insomnia, get out of bed, go to the other room, turn on a soft light, do some sort of relaxing meditation technique, don't look at the time, and then when you start to yawn and your eyelids get heavy, then climb back into bed and don't check the time. I think it takes a lot of self-discipline to do something like that, but I think it does work. Sleep is in the world of the timeless. Time is during the day and for getting things done. In general, when I'm like falling asleep for a nap or something, I don't enjoy the question like, what time are you getting up, or what time is it, or, you know, what time is this thing happening? That wakes me back up again. Time. Time is responsibilities. And like, again, as we fall asleep, there's a certain kind of like not knowing what time it is, living in the timeless. Another thing is keeping bed just for sleeping, you know, maybe human connection, but not doing computer stuff or working or being on the phone or eating or watching TV. Some people recommend don't even read in bed, you know, get up and be in a chair to do that. You know, if you have insomnia for 15 or 30 minutes, your best guesstimate, because ideally not looking at a clock, you know, the suggestion is get up, don't lie there and have anxiety in bed. Don't anchor that connection or that operant conditioning to your brain to connect your bed with sleeplessness. Go do something else in the other room. And the final thing I want to talk about is trust. I think a lot of times an attitude of trust can allow our mind and body to settle and simply and naturally let go of the day. So I think trusting that other people's expectations of us, our boss, our kids, our moms, society, all those people know that we need sleep. When it's bedtime, all the world wants us to do is sleep. All the to-do items and all the things that we feel like the world's expecting of us and doing our job well and all the people relying on us, we can let it go for the time when we power down and rest. Sleep is important for psychological repair and for physical repair. There's this book, Why We Sleep. It's sort of a big hit book a couple years ago. It was sort of the science book of the year kind of thing. And I read the book. Sleep is vital for a lot of different reasons. You can't be a functional person without sleep. And I think society knows that. And whoever's expecting you to knock out results, they know that you need sleep. It's sort of built into the system. So trusting that you did enough today, you deserve sleep, you can put a stop and let go of the day's events, letting it all go till tomorrow, trusting that the tomorrow you is competent and will take care of things. Also feeling like you're safe in your little nest. You know, if you have a locked door and strong walls around you and you have neighbors you can trust, other people in the house, we have a primordial fear of a bear getting into the room, and our anxieties can feel the same, even if they're just, you know, psychological. They can feel like physical unsafety, but trusting that we have physical safety, you know, and you're just in your little nest there and you've got locked door and walls and, yep, you're safe. So a core element of mindfulness is the present moment. We talk about be here now and the power of now. And in this present moment, you know, our worry wart brain might say things might go wrong, but tomorrow isn't happening yet. And right now, all there is nighttime and the softness of the bed and the darkness and the quiet. Right at this moment, there's no problem. And we can trust the night. We can trust the process of sleep. We can trust that everyone knows that we deserve sleep and need sleep, and trust the house that is protecting us, and just trust the experience of sleep. Those are some thoughts about sleep. I appreciate you being here. I hope some of this information was helpful to you. Wishing you restful sleep tonight and always. Thanks again for being here.